All right. Make yourself comfortable. Find a nice place to sit. Take another chair. Put your feet up. I don't mind. I'm really excited to do this, and I'm really excited to see more people than I thought would be here. Trust me, doing personal evangelism is not a hot button that everybody wants to attend. I think it was number 80 of things that people wanted to see in their churches. So it's not a popular thing. I'm hoping that we can have some fun here, and that when you leave here this afternoon, you'll be energized and able to try new things in a new way. I'm going to be presenting a lot of little suggestions. Some of them will work for some for others. I don't have a perfect plan for everybody. I want you to be, for you to be comfortable with your own self so that you are learning how to do this on your own terms. All right. Before anything, if you have your smartphone, you can go and download the presentation notes. It's a PDF. So when you go to rvauckland.com, there is a button in there called 1920. If you hit the 1920, you will be able to download it, and you can follow on your own phone or laptop or whatever you have. Also, it'll help you maybe to review afterwards. So please do that. So this is why I was counting numbers, in case Zach wondered. If we can get 16% of a group to change or to shift, it will influence the whole. The 16% will actually change the other 80%. So I don't know how many people traditionally come to these services here in 1920, but if we can get 16% of those people to change, according to the research of, Malcolm Gladwell, you can change the rest. Isn't that cool? So you guys are really a special group because of that. Unfortunately, some of us are leaving, but you can take this to Brazil with you. So I'm going to share a few stories as we go along to amplify a point. Does anyone know what kind of airplane this is? Hank John, what kind of airplane? It's a DC-9, awesome. Yes, and so once upon a time, I was much younger than today. I was a single man, and I got on a DC-9 to fly from Toronto to Vancouver. And it stopped in Winnipeg, and a lot of people got on and off, but I stayed on the plane. So as I get on the plane in Toronto, I think this is going to be somebody's going to sit beside me, and I'm a rookie at sharing my faith, but this is really good. They're not going anywhere. So I'm going to share my faith whoever sits beside me. I'm really excited to see who God is going to put beside me, and it's a businessman. And I'm thinking, it's Winnipeg. How long does it Toronto, Winnipeg? An hour and a half, two? Something like that? I got this guy. He's totally full plane. He can't even change his seat. And I gave him every barrel about the gospel. I mean, I was ruthless. I was going to get this guy converted in the next 2 hours. I've never seen anybody so uncomfortable. You know, I actually think he was looking around if there were empty seats anywhere. When we landed, you have never seen a guy leave an airplane so fast. And I'm sitting there, good job. You know, I'm so stoked because I was able to tell him everything about the Jesus and how wonderful it is to be his follower. Never gave him a chance to say anything. Okay, so the plane is filling up again. It's empty seat. The plane is almost full. There's no more seats. And I said this prayer. Now, please forgive me. I'm a single guy, you know. You need to understand this. I don't have anyone in my life. Lord, instead of an old man, could you put a beautiful woman beside me this time? Do you think God's going to answer that? I didn't have time to think when down the aisle comes the most beautiful woman in the world, and she will have to sit beside me because there's no more seats. And I'm like, oh yes. And she sits beside me and, hi, how are you? And we're having this wonderful chat all the way from Winnipeg to Vancouver, which is much longer. Well, she was a model. She was on a model trip, you know, to go to Vancouver to do some modeling. And many hours later, this woman knew, heard nothing about the gospel, but I ended up with her phone number and her address. And as we left the airplane, we're still talking, she says, please, when you're in Winnipeg, look me out, let's go out for dinner. This most beautiful woman in the world. I mean, I wasn't quite self-assured back in those days. That was a big thing. And then I'm walking off the plane. I'm coming to Paul Lira's wedding, by the way. The Lord spoke to me. He said, the first guy will never, ever listen to a Christian again. Because as soon as somebody starts telling him about the Lord, he'll say, don't tell me I had a guy chew my ears off on the plane. I don't want to hear about it. The second person, I sent the woman you wanted, and all you got was her phone number and her address. I never shared my faith with her because I was, wow. So I want to start off with that story because we all have failure stories with good intentions, and then they go south. So I'm going to give you guys a moment here. Did you ever fail? I want to hear your worst failure story when you had good intention to share your faith and then it went horribly wrong. Hank?
Right now?
Yeah.
I'm a horrible failure, but
well,
I was working on a job site.
Yep.
And doing some of the common area stairwells.
Yeah.
And there was a guy who was there, kind of a laborer, who was covering up what we were installing. And he started talking about spiritual stuff. I was, you know, talking with him, and it was good. And then that night, I was like, Lord, if you want me to, you know, speak to this guy more, put us in the stairwell again together with nobody else.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And that happened. But I didn't say
see, that's, no. That's, okay, anybody else? Thank you, that's a great one. Nancy,
I prepped you for this.
Well, yeah, I actually have a friend that I shared my faith with, and she actually started coming to church with me, and I gave her a Bible, and it seemed to be going fine, except for she didn't like the idea of, like, she still wanted to hang out with her friends and stuff like that, and didn't want, she just, I was too much.
Yeah. Too much too soon?
So she, yeah, she actually was one of my roommates.
Yeah.
And when she was moving out, she tossed the Bible that I gave her into the garbage and left it there for me to see.
Just make sure you saw it, yeah.
And never spoke to me again.
Wow. That's pretty drastic.
Yeah.
Anybody else? This is really important that we're able to share these stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
My name's Dale.
Hi, Dale.
So a couple weeks ago, my daughter turned six, and I had a birthday party for her, and another single mom, technically single mom, and her daughter around the same age came, and of course, not this woman was kind of attractive, so mm-hmm. I can relate to that part of the story. I'm a single dad.
Okay.
And
thanks for throwing that in.
So I told her a little bit of a witnessing story. She's mm-hmm. she's not really a, you know, actual believer as far as I know, but I haven't really checked it out that well. But I've always thought I should have an opportunity to witness mm-hmm. to her somehow, even if it's just through my kids and yeah. my life and everything. But I told her a story about what had happened the day before. It was someone else she's familiar with. And I said, oh yeah, that old curmudgeon that you know, lives there. I said he was going on and on and on. I was trying to engage him, and I just want to remind you, this is what I'm telling her.
Yeah.
I said, and I finally just decided all I could say was, you need Jesus. And I'm laughing, I'm telling her, and saying, I said that to him 10 times. And she's looking at me like, oh yeah. But I don't know really how she felt about that. But after that, that really wasn't what I needed.
You could have done.
I needed to tell her.
You could have probably done better.
that encounter with him was bang on in my heart,
right.
in my spirit. That's what he needed to hear. But I didn't need to share that with her. So.
Okay. So one more. Yeah.
I told him about Christ in those days, but I didn't know how
Right. Right.
I mean, and that's so bad.
Yeah.
And by those actions, the person is saying, where is the God that she's speaking?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
That happens.
Yeah, too much, too soon, too aggressive.
Yes, like too aggressive. Yeah.
So what I'm going to suggest to this, I don't know, this is for you mostly. If you could get into a habit for the next year to make it possible at the beginning of every service to say, does anybody have a failure story to share us that has happened in the past week? Okay, and if they don't have one of those, then say, how about, do you have a story that would bless us all? Where you tried to share your faith. Give people the opportunity, because if people then start looking forward to that part of the service, then it brings the 80% into the picture, because it's actually fun, because it'll, part of it will be fun, because when people share about their failures, it's usually, if we can all laugh with you, it's okay, you know. And hopefully we all learn something from the failures. As you know, success is not the only way to learn. Failure is a really great teacher. All right, so let's... I love this term, missional community. I'd like to think of church as a missional community. So what we think church growth looks like, we think it's something like this, don't we? If we just do everything right, we are going to grow those numbers. But the reality is that it looks like this. It's very confusing, and it goes all over the place, and we seldom get that beautiful arrow going like that.
You can go back in time. Travel.
You saw that, right? Yeah, you saw that. Yeah, exactly. Thank you for pointing that out. So this fellow said, the most effective evangelism by far occurs through meaningful relationship between Christians and non-Christians. We must be close enough to unbelievers for Christ to be observed and experienced through us. One reason today's churches are not growing is that the social networks of people in these churches are almost entirely within the church. So, his name is Charles Arne. So, let me just show you what I have personally done some years ago. If you're my Facebook friend, this is the page you've seen. On this page group are over 1,000 people. I have more than 1,000 people who've wanted to friend me. And if you're one of them, thank you. All of them are believers. It didn't start out that way, because early on in Facebook era, there were unsaved friends here as well. Now, I have been blessed by incredible friends who are not believers. Gays, lesbians, atheists, you name it, all the whole full spectrum. I am so thankful to God that he has allowed me to be their friend, and they call me their friend. Now, you can understand when you have 1,000 people in your friends list that there are some ultra-Christians in there, the ones that are pushing the envelope, saying hateful things about gays, etc. And the first time I saw that, I almost had a heart attack, because I thought, all my gay friends just saw that posting. Maybe they didn't, but I thought they would. And I don't agree with that posting. And even if I do agree with it, this is not how to win them to Christ. So, and other times, other people were making comments, and I thought, no, I will lose these unbelievers as my friends if I continue to have them among 1,000 Christians, many of them far right, in the States as well, especially. So I came up with a second. This one is my other. It's Rocklin Ari Yuhani. The other one is Ari Rocklin. 4% of people are Christians among 123 people. Now, who are those 4%? My mom, my wife, because I want people to see that I'm a family guy and that I'm not looking for anything else except to be their friend. On this site, I get every now and then to stand up for my Christian faith in a way that does not chase anybody out to unfriend me. For example, somebody will post, religion is the reason for all wars. You've heard that, right? And then I just very gently go to their private message and say, if according to the research done by Fraser University, it is actually 4%. And here is a link to that study. And this lesbian lady friend of mine next day said, I'm sorry I made that posting. I've been
told that I have been shown that I was wrong. Here is a link for everybody. So what happened? This whole unchristian friendship of hers saw that religion is not the reason for all wars. It's only 4%. It's 6% if you include Muslims. So, you know, the numbers are very small compared to all, right? So a few times people have said some bad things about some spiritual leaders that have gone off the curb and who are no longer behaving in a Christ-like manner, and say all Christians are like this. Then I can say very gently, not quite true, because you know I'm a Christian and I am not like that. So I'm able to share my faith in kind ways, and I prefer hanging out with this website because of that, because I have an audience. It's really interesting to see what happens sometimes to a comment when they start discussing it in their group. Who is this Ari guy? Why are you friends with him? You know, because they don't know me and they don't know our relationship. And then to see a hardcore lesbian woman defend his Christian friend, it makes you feel really good. That, you know, she says, well, he's a Christian, but he's my friend and I love him. That's quite the statement. And all of a sudden I get friend requests from her circle of friends. So in some way, I'm more effective sharing my faith than I would ever be among my Christianhood, right? So I strongly recommend that you do something similar if you want to use social media to win people. So here's the modern day discipleship model. At the top, we have attend, then we have connect and serve and go. So this is the model we have. Bring people into church and then equip them to go, and then we trickle out. However, Jesus had a different model. He invested in 2 people. He invested in 12 people, 70 and 500. So do you see, it's totally different. So it's the individuals were empowered to go instead of the unity. Here's another way to look at it. We have church where we try our hardest to get people to come to church. I would say in my circle of unsaved friends, 1 out of 100 might come to church if I put really a lot of pressure on them. Not because they want to come. So that model, I don't think, is working in our society here as well anymore. So this is what I want to see. I want every person in church to have the missional mindset where they are going into the world. They are making the friendship, the connections, which will invariably lead to them saying, do you go to church? Where do you go? Can I come? Nothing is greater than having an unsaved person says, can I come to your church? That is much better than saying, please come to our church. So we need to equip everyone in our church to be out there in the real world making those relationships. So I'm going to teach you about a thing called principle of tolerable risk. I was taught this method by a CIA agent. I was very happy that he showed. He said this is going to work really well for tent makers who go to strategic countries, but I'm also adapted it to teach you. This should make everyone here empowered to share their faith in some way in every situation that you go out to. So I'm actually calling this whole session POTR. So it's the principle of tolerable risk. And I love this. It took me forever in Finland to find out how do you say that in Finnish, until I was at Metrokappeli in Helsinki, and an old man in the back said, hallitun riskin periaate. Pretty good, huh? I love that one. So I love using that. All right, so if the letters are off, it's because we went from a PC to a Mac. This is what happens in technology. So we're going to look at what it is. The principle is that residual risk shall be reduced as far as reasonably practicable. If there is risk involved, how do we reduce it? For it to be tolerable, it must be possible to demonstrate that the cost involved in reducing the risk further would grossly, disproportionately, to the benefit gained. So that means if you are so scared of sharing your faith that you do nothing, you have taken a huge risk of not getting anywhere. So you cannot go so far into your safety zone that there is no longer any effect for the kingdom. Risk is measured by the distance between the best thing that can happen and the worst. Okay, so you got two extremes. So what if the opportunity lost is sometimes greater than the risk involved in advancing the kingdom? Yeah?
Do you have these slides that you sent over to?
Yeah, they were, you weren't here?
No.
RERockland.com?
I also went to your website.
It's 1920. One of the bars on top is 1920.
The top bar?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry. So you can download them now or later. It doesn't matter. All right, so we want to be advancing the kingdom, and we also want to not push anybody away from the kingdom. So those are the extremes. So we need to find, where can I operate without that? As a side note, in my Christian walk, I have observed that almost every Christian I know is very good at pushing somebody further away from salvation. Not that they deliberately want to do that. It simply is the result of their efforts in wanting to bring somebody to Christ. So the first step is, don't push anybody further away from Christ in your behavior. And that is our default setting. We are so good at that, because we have something so good to give them that we think it doesn't matter, because what I have to offer is so amazing. You have to understand how amazing it is. So we are driven by zeal, misplaced. So do we sometimes draw back in fear? Maybe fear of failure. All right, so the principle to tolerate risk, you got the highest risk possible, and you have the lowest. So it says no risk. It always starts at the no risk. Everything we do starts at no risk, and then there's medium risk. And so you sort of go from bottom, top, and you build your own risk tolerance for whatever situation. So to illustrate this point in a very simple matter, how many people are single here? One, two, three. All right, this is for you single people, but please, you know, the rest of you can hang in there. So, principle of tolerable risk in getting a date. All right, you're interested in a girl, or a girl is interested in a guy somewhere, and this is, how do I get a date with that person? Because it's really far away when you're just looking from far, right? There is a process I have to do, and I have to take some risk. I'd love to talk to guys here about their failed attempts at trying to get a date. Those would be really hilarious. But we don't have time. So, here's my suggestions for you single people. Quick smile. Just, if there's somebody you're remotely interested in, a quick smile and then look away quick. Is that risky? Nah. No risk at all. Except in today's me world, whatever. One of the hardest things for me, I'm a grandfather. I can no longer compliment people. Men, well, I can compliment men and young men, but it's really scary to compliment a woman who's standing behind you in a lineup and say, you know, you just can't do it anymore. The situation has changed in the world. So you have to be really careful. So quick smile, look away. The next one is accidentally meeting this person. Find out where they sort of hang out, or if you saw them at a restaurant, well, go back to the restaurant. So accidentally meeting someone again after you've given the quick smile. And then here's a really good trick for you guys. Pretend not to be too interested. This works. The reason I am married to Ruth is because at one time I was able to pretend I was not interested. And there was a noticeable interest on her part when she realized that. Best trick you'll ever get, guys. And then introduce yourself. Tell them what you do and whatever. And have a meaningful conversation. See how the risk level, somewhere along the line with the wrong person here, you've been already told to get lost, or you've been slapped. I don't know. And then you get to the ultimate goal is, would you go out with a date, or would you go out for dinner or coffee with me? So do you see how it works? The system works? Okay. This is not complicated. So now all of you are in the work world. Is anybody here in school? Everybody, you aren't, but you've been in the work world, right?
Oh, no, I'm at work.
You're at work in school, okay. Good, double one. Okay, so here is principle of tolerable risk, sharing your faith at work. We're going to look at this as a whole session, so we're not going to spend too much time on this. So diligence, working as unto the Lord, is the first step you must do. You must be the kind of worker that honors God. If you're not, if you come in late, if you cheat, if you don't do your work well, that is not, you do not start sharing your faith if you are a lousy worker, which none of you are. But just in case, so that's the lowest form. Do your work as unto the Lord. And then make the coffee. It doesn't mean physically making the coffee. It means be the person who is aware enough to know, oh, that needs to be done, I'll do it. Like, it could be making the coffees if you work in an office. Do the thing that people are resistant to do. Show them servanthood. Servanthood seldom backfires. Now you pray in secret. Start praying for everybody at work in secret. Do you see them? Is there any risk in those yet? Almost nothing. But look, we're doing already. We're already doing three things, and we're not even getting into any trouble. Pray respectfully for permission. When people at your workplace share with you at coffee breaks or lunch breaks about the challenges they're facing, because very seldom do they come up and, oh, do I have something wonderful to tell you what happened? It's usually in the work environment, somebody sharing their heart about how terrible their husband or wife is, or whatever is going on in their lives. And then for you to then respectfully pray for them with their permission. I'll share a story about how what happened to me in this one time. And then you start praying that God arrange for me to be in the right place at the right time with a coworker for a divine appointment where we actually have this moment where we can have a deeper conversation. So that God has arranged this, and you know it for a fact that God has arranged it, because it's like, wow, this is it. And your first thing is, man, I'm not prepared for this. What am I supposed to say now? God has arranged this. That's why you're here. And then your life. Allow them to observe your life because of the comments that you make in everyday conversation, which are godly. You don't have to tell people when they tell you a dirty joke that, oh, that's terrible, I'm a Christian, I don't listen to dirty jokes. How do you deal with that? When I worked in a hospital, every day people told dirty jokes. So I really, you know, I used to stand in the crowd and I decided to laugh when everybody else laughed. And then it started bothering me. I said, no, this is not good. And then I started telling a clean joke. Soon as they finished their dirty joke, everybody stopped laughing. I had a joke book that I had practiced some jokes, and I would tell a clean joke. And very soon after that, the guy who was always telling the dirty jokes at lunch would tell his dirty joke, and it's over to the Christian for his clean joke. And that was, thank you. So it became a known factor that the Christian guy is going to tell clean jokes. And people still laugh because they were funny. I have some funny jokes. They're all not dad jokes. Zach, I told a joke this morning, and he said, oh, that's a dad joke. Ouch, you know.
I tell dad jokes.
Okay. So buy the book to somebody. Don't buy the book that's on sale. Buy the book that meets their life situation. Really important. Once you get to know coworkers, what they're struggling with, what's going on in their life, buy a book that fits that situation because they're more likely to read it. And they also respect you for having found a book that is for their situation. You show them respect for them. And then invite people into a closer relationship for coffee and walks or whatever. All right, so now you want to share your story with somebody, and we're going to spend a whole session on how to develop that. So you need to prepare. There's no threat in preparing. Write your story down so that you get good at it. And then you pray. As soon as you get an opportunity to share your story, a panic prayer, Lord, help me now, because I'm about to open my mouth, and usually it doesn't go out that well. So let me help me out this time. Then tell the story, an event from your life, something that is you. It's not something, oh, I heard this story about someone else. You can do that too, but a story from your life that will impact a person. Ask if you can share your story. Sometimes you need permission. I had a Canadian businessman on airplanes are the worst in the world to witness to. I would rather have 100 angry Muslims than one politically correct Canadian businessman sitting beside me on an airplane. And they're really tough. You know, I've been deeply hurt. Probably the most hurt I've been have been people sitting on an airplane. I decided I'm going to just ask this guy differently. Instead of having conversation, I asked him for permission. Can I share a story? He says, we got 9 hours. Go crazy. So he gave me permission. Well, I'd like to say that he got saved. He didn't. I shared my story and he ridiculed it and made me feel about that big at the end. But I got to share my story. I don't know what happened to him afterward. I did the right thing by sharing my story and getting his permission. Read Bible verses to people that befit their situation. And here's a clue. Don't say it. 1 Timothy 4:7 says this. Do you know what? God's word is so powerful that we don't have to tell people this is from the Bible and this is from Timothy 2. We don't have to do that. Trust the word. It is powerful in itself. And I started leaving notes for my coworkers from Proverbs, from the Message version. I used to leave them on our board, a whiteboard. And people would come running in and says, oh, that's a good one. And then months later, where are you getting these things? These are really good. I'm writing some of these down. And I said, you don't want to know. Yes, we do. And the longer I kept them in suspense, the more interest there was. And then finally, I had the day came when I says, well, it's from an ancient book. And it's from the book of Proverbs. Man, I've never read stuff like this. Well, how come I haven't found this stuff? So anyway, it led to a really good thing because people were getting the word of God and they didn't even know that this was from the scriptures. Because, as you know, politically correct Canadians, if you tell them the Bible says, well, I don't even believe in the Bible. We have to get them thirsty for the word of God first before we tell them. So ask for a commitment of some sort in sharing your story. Hospitality is something that we church members are not using well enough. Where do you invite people to? Oh, come to church. No, invite them to your home first. Let's start there. And, you know, and start working on all these things that you're going to be learning on today. So commitment to simply saying, I will invite people, my door will always be open, has zero threat. And also go to their homes when they invite you. So invite people into your home and have that relationship. I sometimes bless a home when I first walk in there. It doesn't matter. Most of the time, people really like it. Not every time. And you learn quickly who wants their home blessed and who doesn't. Don't do that again. Okay, no problem. I just thought it would be a good idea. I've never been here before. It's my habit of blessing people's home. No worries. I want to respect you. And if they're in your home, always, always say, in my family, we pray a blessing for the meal, and then don't go and ask, is it okay with you? They're in your home. Just start praying. I have never had anyone get upset in my home for praying over a meal, but people have commented that is such a nice habit. So what are you showing here? This household serves God, puts God first. Yeah.
Pretty soon when you're doing that,
you'll
also, when you visit them, they ask you to pray for them.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah. Doesn't that feel
sweet?
Yeah, yeah. Sharing. So listen to your friends. Hear them out. Find out where they are. We're too quick to tell instead of listening. The longer you listen, the more you understand them. And people always like to tell things about their life. So allow them. Ask them good questions. When I'm sharing my faith like I did this morning at 6 o'clock, not my best time of day, trust me, I decided I'm just going to ask this guy questions. And you know, 1 hour on a bus at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I must have asked him 30, 40 questions. He was a forest firefighter. And it was pretty exciting. His life is pretty exciting. He's out there during the summertime fighting these fires. And finally he says to me, he says, I'm doing all the talking. To him, he says to me, I'm doing all the talking. So what is it that you do? And my pat answer to politically correct Canadians is, you can't handle it. And he goes, oh, come on. I goes, are you sure? He goes, sure. Yeah, yeah. I mean, by that time, 45 minutes, he's been talking to me. I goes, well, I'm going to a church to talk about how to share your faith. Say what? I goes, I'm going to a church to talk about how to share your faith. And I'm sorry, guys, I used a word that shouldn't go into the microphone without pissing people off. I used that word deliberately because I wanted to drop this instead of him thinking of some super holy thing here, that this is a very practical thing. And he says, oh, how do you do that? And here we go. But 45 minutes of listening and 15 minutes of sharing what I do and why I follow Jesus. So it's pretty cool. I'm not going to tell you about the failure before this guy. It was a really bad one. I was standing at the bus stop and that went south. Anyway, quote a Bible verse again without telling where it is. Watch a video when you're at your home, in people's home, and invite people, once they're interested, to study the Bible in your home. Wouldn't it be great if everybody church member did this before they brought their people to church, their friends? Wouldn't it be amazing for the pastors? The pastors would be so excited that these people are already on their way. So the pastor has a real challenge. He doesn't know the person that you bring into church. He has no connection. Imagine how tough that is. So have some mercy on your pastors. Do the prep work before you bring them to church. Have you heard of the Alpha Course? It's a great tool, and I'm not going to go really quickly on it. There's a website where you can tell people to watch the videos, and then you can get together and talk with them. You can put it on the USB stick, meet weekly to discuss what they're learning. Or you can do it one-on-one if you have the time. You can just anywhere these days. Invite them to your home if you want to have more than one or two people over. And also as a guest in someone's home. And there's a program called Alpha in the Workplace, which is not working all that well in Canada. I am an advisor to Alpha Canada, and I find out what works and what doesn't. And Alpha in the Workplace is working really badly in Canada. And in Singapore, some say that it has raised the percentage of believers in Singapore in 10 years. Alpha in the Workplace has raised it from 27% to 31% believers. Those are statistics. I don't know how accurate they are. There's no reason to invent them because they have very, very accurate ways of monitoring. It's amazing. You're driving down in Singapore and a huge road sign, Alpha in the Workplace, join us. Like, where do you see that in Canada? Not in my lifetime yet. All right, so risk. We want to analyze it and we want to find our baseline. We want to find the ultimate goal. And we want to have some steps in between. Most of you don't have paper and pen, but I'm thinking you can do this anyway. So name your challenge. What is your challenge in sharing your faith? I don't want to spend time everybody writing it, could you just give them out? Where is your biggest challenge that actually gives to you like this?
Yeah. I'm going to say 5 meters. Once I
yep.
A successful realtor, yep. Is one we've seen
it 3 times. You see from another culture?
Yeah. The next one is cross corner. They just moved in a year ago. Mm-hmm. Something terrible going on in that household. About 2 months ago, she walked up to her new dog and she just let life from us. Something committed suicide.
Wow.
2 years ago, and she's a mess.
Wow.
So, across the way, I've got another neighbor. See, this is your circle of neighbors.
Yeah.
It's a man, and he's low, grumpy, and we drive his horse paying back.
Wow.
Finish,
wow.
And then next door to him is our lesbian neighbors. And the last neighbor, this is Surround.
Yeah.
He's our overall neighbors.
Wow. Well, this is typical Canada, isn't it?
Yeah. It's pretty impressive. It's just getting low and power.
Okay, so. Okay. So first of all, I'm commending you for even thinking that your neighbors are part of this, that they are the people.
They're the people that
So your baseline is, I want to impact them for God's kingdom somehow. That's probably your high point at this point. Because your high point at this point is not having them repent in the cul-de-sac, but just getting to that point where you can at least talk to them. So what would be your low point? What would be the starting point? And if somebody wants to jump in here, that's a pretty amazing situation.
And very unique. Each one is different.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Well, so, and the other ones, there are a lot of people there from different culture. And their answer to any question, what's your first name? Lee. What's your last name? Lee. Yes. So, yeah.
So, okay. Jump in here. What would be their first step? Their vision is clear. They want to reach these neighbors in their cul-de-sac. What is the first step in this world we've been talking about? How about
you mean sequentially?
Just not the first, the easiest one
the first motion toward being able to share your faith with them.
Prayer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Prayer, and I would add, once you know their names, to list their names somewhere in your home, in your Bible, in your fridge, somewhere, so that you're reminded to pray for them daily. Put their names on your phone list. I mean, there's prayer things for your phones these days. Something, because this is a spiritual thing. Look at all the spiritual challenges you have in this group of people. So prayer, I would say, is the first three steps.
Yeah.
Okay, so
what do you do, and what's the opportunity, and how do you pay, for example, like mobile for a meal? Say that, hey, at least we'll have a bowl of coffee, or anything like that. Or a year, we were invited because you're too pushy.
So inviting to the coffee would be probably past the prayer, but not this one after the prayer. There's one in between that I'm thinking of. What's before inviting them over? In neighborhood.
Making the coffee. being helpful in the neighborhood, isn't it?
Exactly. So if you see something that needs to be done, something that they're struggling with, the guy's changing his tire, well, nobody does that anymore. But what, you know...
He's a patriarch, his wife, and he's got his old son, and first generation, his kids and his grandkids, and he's a patriarch, and he's in charge, and he's competent.
But do you see what I mean? That you're introducing yourself into the mix and praying for those opportunities. Lord, how can I help this neighbor? How can I help this neighbor? And watch what happens. I am a firm believer that when you start that battle, first of all, the devil's going to not like any of this. It will probably go worse before it gets better. But simply praying, Lord, I want to reach that neighbor, make it happen. How can I help them? How can I show themselves that I'm a servant? I have a servant's heart. And how can I become a part of their life more? Now, here's the bottom line. You're not going to get everybody. Absolutely not. And if you do, that's great. But, statistically, maybe I shouldn't say that when talking about the Lord, because he can do miracles. But, you know, don't get discouraged if you don't get 5 out of 5. Let's start with one.
One out of each household would be fine.
Exactly. So, yeah. So, you know... Okay, anybody else have a bottom line? Where's your hardest challenge? Hank, do you still work at Air Canada checking in people?
Yes.
So how are you going to win the first 1,000 to the Lord that stand in front of you every day? Elder Hank.
My name check.
No, but let's say, obviously, I know by Air Canada rules, you're not allowed to share your faith with anybody.
No, but with colleagues on your private time.
Exactly. But, okay, I'm going to throw this at you. You want to impact one passenger a day, or one a week. I don't care what the number is. I don't want you to be legalistic. But you meet a lot of people in your day. You can make a huge difference. I'm a passenger. I know what it's like when a ticket agent makes my day. So what is the lowest thing you can do to a passenger? I know you, that you smile a lot and you're a good guy at the, but how can you step up the game for the kingdom? Not to get Air Canada bonus points, but to get a kingdom input. What can you do without getting fired? See, there's always that danger. If you take it to, if somebody goes and complains to your boss, oh, he's shoving religion down my throat, right? So, you know, we have difficult situations in our everyday life, but that is where you spend the majority of your day. Remember, where do you spend the majority of your day? That is your mission field. That is your natural mission field. So I don't want to push you into a corner, Hank. I'm just saying that, how could you influence one person? What could you do that has no threat? Could you wait for somebody who looks obviously really down? And not because they were treated badly by Air Canada, which never happens, of course. But there are people who come up to you who looks like everything is lost, right?
Yeah, I think if the person starts talking about something, that's to me, then that's a sign that I have permission to say something as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, pretty soft and stuff. And we said, oh, everything's bad. I wish someone would pray for me or something.
Exactly. Well, that's a beauty.
I can say a prayer for you if you like.
That's absolutely perfect. You know, so that's what I mean. So that you're trying to do something to these massive amount of people that come to you besides your coworkers. That's a different thing. Coworkers is, you know, also important. But, you know, anytime you're involved with the public, the opportunities are there, but for you to catch them, to be vigilant, yeah?
So are we operating under the premise that Hank's smile and nice demeanor, yeah, the person walks away and says, that was an awfully nice fellow.
That's the baseline.
Air Canada is great, right? But is that if that person walks away just thinking that this is an awfully nice fellow,
yeah,
if they don't have some inkling that he is representing our Lord,
the kingdom, yeah,
is it all for naught?
No. No. Sometimes there's a spiritual thing going on that we have to trust. You know, it says in the Bible that Christ's aroma in us, the fragrance. And that is a definite, there was a research, I could not find it, that showed how many more people were becoming believers by simply being blessed by other Christians. Meaning, I bless you.
Hello. Again,
compared to the people who were hunting down and trying to win people,
yeah,
that the it was just an incredible difference. They were doing surveys of people who'd been saved, and you know, and just simple process of bless you, God bless you,
yeah,
so, had more of an impact than somebody coming down, come to my church,
yeah,
on the long run, and, you know, as a volume. So never underestimate the fact that just smiling. And maybe in his breath, under, you know, to himself, saying, "Lord, bless that person." If you can't say it loud, simply you're just establishing a spiritual ground. And of course, you're never going to see that person again. So therefore, you only have one moment to bless them. And whether that's just by your Christian behavior, being good at your work, you know, God honors work. When we do our work as unto Him, we're going to be dealing with this a little bit later on. So I don't want to get ahead of myself. So what we looked at, your easiest step. Does anybody else have an easy first step, something for their particular challenge? You work in construction, right, Timo? Tim? So are all the people there believers? Or So there's a lot of swearing going on, right? A lot of F words, right? And, you know, so here's a challenge for you. How do you start cleaning up? How do you start impacting those guys who swear a lot for the kingdom without making them angry at you and dismissing you as a friend or coworker?
Good question.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't have the answer to that, but that's something where you can start. That was like the dirty jokes. Tell a clean joke. You know, bring balance.
Often people also, they notice that you don't swear.
Exactly.
People swear.
Absolutely.
That's how they get out of frustration. But
exactly.
Comes along,
yep,
like people who look like Tim,
yep,
you kind of assume,
mm-hmm,
that you don't swear,
yep,
and they don't. That already, you know, maybe there's something different in that.
Yep.
Why does he not swear?
So my first, if somebody ever says that, why don't you swear, is not to throw the Bible at them, but to say, because my mom and dad taught me more vocabulary, I don't need to. They gave me a good vocabulary. Because that is a good reason. You don't need those words because you have other ways to express yourself. And that would pass off as a joke, right? They wouldn't get mad at that. So you're kind of opening up a conversation, and by your example, obviously not being a part of it. Yeah?
So I think a challenging mission field for me is, you can picture me,
mm-hmm,
at the playground.
Yep.
My six-year-old is in,
yep,
the playground. And I'm surrounded by other parents.
Yeah.
You know, other caregivers. I have a great opportunity to befriend them.
Yeah, and because they want to talk when their kids are present.
To talk about.
Yeah. You have the kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, to talk about?
Yeah.
Okay, everybody help him out. What's his first step that does not get him banned from the park? Or?
Or just generally ignore.
Yeah, or ignore. Yeah, even worse. Yeah, so anybody, what can he do? You go back to the same park. So,
oh, yeah, yeah,
so it's the same people. Odds are good that you're
like regulars. Yeah.
Yeah, odds are good. You see, this is a different, you know, because you know you may meet them again.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you don't want to start with the heavy hitting at the beginning.
You know, my daughter's in kindergarten. I might know some of these people for the next,
exactly,
7 years.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I think the first step is to pray for,
exactly,
the opportunity.
Yeah.
To,
yeah. Exactly. And I'm hoping that by the end of this seminar, you will have
picked up the ways that God uses us in these kind of situations, where then you not only pray, but then you expect God to do something, because it's too easy to pray and walk away. But then there's a commitment. To me, when I pray, Lord, I want to talk to this young guy on the bus about you. I've made a commitment to God.
Right.
And most likely God has the same thing. He's not thinking, Ari, you're really tired. You didn't sleep well last night. You're worried about the seminar. Just take a break. He doesn't do that. He says, I heard that. I care about this young man that I put beside you. So yeah, so let's just keep going. And we'll. So then the ultimate goal, of course, is you always, you know, set an ultimate goal. Is it to be able to give this person a Bible? Is it to, what is it? So basically, I'm just teaching you to look at the ranges, and then how do I get from this non-threatening to the ultimate goal? And you may never get to the ultimate goal, but it's still good to have a goal, yeah?
One thing, and I'm getting back to the person, and at that time, I worked for 20 years.
Yeah.
Selling business, he said, John doesn't swear. And he noticed.
Excellent.
And then,
yeah.
The other part is that he started talking about Corey.
Right.
He is another of times. And I lived in one hotel with Corey for 5 years. Corey is a Bible believing Mennonite. And they shared a bunk. And Corey brought that in a positive way. All you could say was good about Corey, Corey, Corey.
Yeah.
So he was linking just subconsciously.
Right, exactly, exactly, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, and also, exactly, so to continue the steps, like I'm on step one here, I'm not going to get to step five. So, yeah, yeah, yeah. Zach, have you seen the statistics on how many people generally a person is impacted by before they become a believer? Like how many?
It's similar to sales figures.
Yeah, it is. Is it 8 or 12?
It's like 8 to 12, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So can you imagine it generally takes 8 people to Christians to contact the same person. So always remember, you're one of 8. You do your job well. And hope that the next guy also does it well. So me talking to the guy on the bus today, I probably started something in his life because he wasn't. So maybe the next person comes along, oh yeah, I just met a guy on the bus. Do you see? And that's how God works. You know, God brings us across incrementally. So I'm going to share this story. We're going to be talking about annoyances later in the next session. So this is the story, and we're going to have a little break right after the story. You're going to hear more about this, but to me, I have become so good at knowing when God is going to do something around me because I get annoyed. Literally, I am so annoyed at times that I'm going, ah! God is about to do something. And I breathe heavy. Okay, God, you're about to do something. What is it? I don't want to miss it. And most of the time, I miss it. So I'm coming from Oulu, which is northern Africa. I might have told the story before, but not everyone has heard it. I have just finished running a long seminar for 120 university students, and they actually come and get me from the podiums as your last train for South is leaving, you know, and they actually grab somebody else to go on the podium, and they ran me to the train station. So I get on this train, it's 9 o'clock at night. 7 o'clock in that morning, I'm supposed to be in another city to start the videotaping in Finnish, which is not my favorite language, of the whole tent-making seminar. There's literally TV crews coming to do this. At 7. I get on that train, and there's nobody in my car. Oh, great, I need to sleep. And I fell asleep like that. I was so tired. And I'm like this guy on the train. I'm just passed out solid, and somebody taps me on the shoulder, and I'm just thinking, if I ignore them, they will go away. And I am getting supremely annoyed. I was already sleeping. You know how hard it is to catch the sleep second time? And I almost opened my eyes and said, what? Meet that! I didn't. Because something in me woke, okay, maybe God's doing something. And there is a woman standing there. And she says, I'm so sorry for waking you up. But I walked by you one time And I felt such a spirit of peace coming from you that I had to come back and ask you, what is it? And there were seats in front of me. And I said, dear lady, she was an older lady, please sit down. 15 minutes later, she gave her heart to the Lord. Because she wanted the peaceful spirit that she did not have. Her life was full of strife. Very difficult life, and she shared about it. She wanted the peace that I had. And that was pretty easy. Come on, everybody. That's not a hard one to win to Christ. I want that peace. Well, sit down. And she was rejoicing over this newfound peace called Jesus. And I went back to sleep. And I'm sleeping again. And like, what? You know, I'm saying to myself because... And she's standing there again. Yes. She says, this is my teenage son. He needs Jesus. Would you please tell him more? The boy sits across from me. 20, 30 minutes later. I want to be a believer. And I pray for the son. And both of them are radiant. The mother and son, they're hugging each other. And it's, we're so sorry, we realize you tried to sleep and then they disappear. Guess who falls asleep after that? I was like on adrenaline. This has never happened to me. I wish it happened to me all the time. This would be really easy. I'll just go stand somewhere and people come, hey, I want to get Jesus. I want to be that guy. So what happens, I don't sleep a wink. This is the price those people paid. I paid a huge price because I could not fall back asleep. I get into the studio. I can't put two words together. I am exhausted, a sleepless night, all the excitement of the seminar, and we put the cameras up, and it went so bad we shut it down. These guys put back, I mean, you should have seen the TV equipment they had brought. I was helping them pack everything back in the car. You know, like, and it failed. We never got the Finnish language tent making seminar into a can because of these events. So for a long time, I felt really bad. But what can you do when you're standing in front of a camera and every time you're going to cut, I don't know what I was supposed to say there. Like everything was a struggle. Like usually I'm pretty fluid when I'm awake. So it was really, really hard. So anyway, the annoyance factor, keep that in mind. Okay, let's take a short break. It's 3 o'clock, so can we have a 7-minute break? Is that okay? Yep.